What's up, everyone? This is Lito, and you're listening to Crypto Testers, a podcast keeping you informed about all the coolest projects in the crypto space. In this episode, I talk to Burak from API3. Although oracles are somewhat of a developer-focused topic, I thought it would be interesting to have a podcast specifically on that topic, because oracles are just so important in DeFi. I mean, we've all heard of the hacks happening in DeFi, and more often than not, a price feed was exploited by a hacker to steal the funds. So I thought it would be cool to know more about oracles. The API3 team has been running Chainlink nodes for a long time and designed API3 to address some of the shortcomings that they saw in Chainlink. And so we discuss how oracles work, what they are, and the whole API3 system. I hope you'll enjoy the podcast. But before we jump into the show, I want to thank our sponsor, Bitwala. Bitwala is Germany's crypto flagship company. They offer users in Europe a full-fledged bank account, including deposit insurance and other things, as well as an integrated Bitcoin and Ethereum wallet. So using Bitwala, you can move your money seamlessly between your euros and your crypto. They keep on adding new features, such as their recently launched Bitcoin interest account, allowing users to earn interest on their Bitcoin. I recommend you check them out. I will post a link in the show notes. Hey, Burak.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. And first of all, big congrats to the successful token distribution event, in which the API3 DAO sold 23 million, I think, worth of API3 tokens, so $23 million, making it the largest DAO or on-chain organization to date. And before that, you actually had a private round led by Placeholder and other very notable crypto VCs. So pretty impressive. Did you expect this initial success?
Yeah, actually, I don't know how this is going to sound, but definitely we were expecting, especially after we got the VC backing, we were pretty confident that people indeed were able to understand what we are trying to do, what we were set up to do. And then doing this in a DAO setting makes a lot of sense. So this is not really a typical IDO, but rather an Oracle solution project that is built in the way that is optimal in a way that is governed by a DAO. So I don't see it to be surprising that the IDO have been so successful.
Yeah. And I guess it really helps in the crypto space when you're backed by some very well-known VCs. It's sort of a trust stamp, because people know that these VCs have done an extensive due diligence, and it really helps. And from what I've gathered, these investors also probably invested because they had a lot of faith in API3's expertise and domain knowledge, because you guys were actually already running Chainlink nodes a couple of years ago when the whole Chainlink network started. So you guys actually have a real domain expertise. Can you talk a little bit about that whole prior history in joining the Chainlink network? And I think the company was called CLC Group or something. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So that was back in 2018. And it was actually 1 year after the Chainlink ICO, and the Chainlink mainnet haven't been launched yet. But we were essentially people within the community that were pretty captivated by the Oracle problem as something worthwhile to work on. And then looking at the potential solutions, there didn't really seem to be any other alternatives. So rather than just being involved in an investor capacity, that we decided that, hey, we should be actually building on this. And then we actually came together and found this CLC Group, which was supposed to be a group of consultants that would build stuff in the Chainlink ecosystem. And it should be noted that at that point, Chainlink wasn't in the top 100 in terms of market cap. They hadn't launched their mainnet, so it was a pretty interesting thing to see, I think. I don't know if this has happened that many times after that.
So I guess it was also for you guys financially very rewarding to start that early in 2018 when it wasn't even in the top 100 tokens. And I mean, we all know what happened afterwards with the project and the price. So, and how did you guys meet, you and the other people who are now part of API3? I know Heike was also part of CLC Group. Did you just encounter them online and you had the same interest in the Oracle space, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I think at that stage, the reason that we were all converged on Chainlink was that there was absolutely no other alternative, or they didn't have any competitors, even though they were like pretty small back then. And even now, if you look at it, like there are not really that many valid competitors. Now, essentially, it was all these people looking at the Oracle problem and then seeing Chainlink as the only solution for that. And then, yeah, how we met was essentially through, it was essentially through the Chainlink community. Some, yeah, essentially people wanted to build some services around it. And the thing with Oracle solutions is that it is less of a technical problem or less of a technical field, but it's an ecosystem thing. So if you don't go to businesses, so if these Oracles are going to be integrating the real world to the blockchain, then someone has to go to the real world company and do the business development, do the technical integration, sell them the idea, and then come up with a business model where it makes sense for them to be integrated to the blockchain. Mm-hmm. So it is like very unlike all the other blockchain projects, in my opinion. I think that was the reason why CLC Group existed, and you don't have a similar kind of DeFi group found on some other projects, for example.
Mm-hmm. So you were kind of the business development branch of the Chainlink network, going to the companies, like face interfacing the real world.
Yeah, actually, I want to correct something. So for example, CLC Group running a Chainlink node was really not important at all. Actually, if you look at our first white paper, we state that we will not be node operators, because in a decentralized Oracle network, for that to provide additional trustlessness guarantees, node operators have to be independent and competing. And if CLC Group becomes a node operator, then they can no longer do business with other node operators because now there are competitors. But what we want to do was to integrate Oracles to real-world businesses, and I will just call them APIs at this point. And then, like, how do you both integrate Oracle to APIs and then you run an Oracle yourself? You would just integrate all of them to yourself and be the monopoly in that. And yeah, essentially what we mainly did was the Honeycomb API marketplace. So this was, again, back in 2018. What we did was we got the Chainlink white paper, just read it together. And then we went through all of the steps that a business would take to get integrated to the network and then have its data used by an end user. Mm-hmm. And we realized that that wouldn't happen spontaneously at all because there were a lot of friction points. For example, the most obvious one is that an API provider doesn't even know a blockchain really. They only heard about Bitcoin and that's it. Especially back in 2018, Oracles were not a thing. We had to first explain them blockchains. We had to explain them smart contracts. And then there's this thing called Oracle. So there was a lot of educating that needed to be done.
I guess.
Yeah. And then again, like the technical integration requires a pretty obscure skill set that pretty much no one had. And we had to learn it from scratch ourselves. So that is pretty difficult. And then again, business development part is difficult. And then there should be a business model to enable all of that. So we came up with this Honeycomb API marketplace model where we went to the API providers and we said, hey, we will build integrations to Chainlink Oracle nodes for you. Mm-hmm. And then we will go to the Chainlink Oracles and say, hey, we have this bunch of API providers. Why don't we integrate all of them to your Oracle? And then whenever you get a call, a request on chain from a smart contract, the Oracle node operator gets some of the money and the API provider gets the rest of the money. And then Honeycomb API marketplace gets some of it. And it is essentially profitable for everyone. And what we later found out that this was indeed the only feasible way to do integrations, because after we launched the API marketplace. Like we had pretty much all of the API integrations, a lot of APIs, a lot of different endpoints of APIs. Like it actually doesn't happen spontaneously, and still very few API providers do integrations all by themselves. And I have seen some of them, although I have seen Chainlink advertise some first-party oracles. Those are essentially integrated by Chainlink themselves. But I have also seen some API providers doing their own integrations. And even Chainlink probably doesn't know about this because like RFs are a bit longer in that regard because we not only talk to blockchain projects, but we talk to a lot of API providers. And like it cannot be really compared to any other project at this point. So yeah, but essentially, even from them, we heard that it was pretty problematic and they couldn't figure out a way to do this. It doesn't make business sense.
Yeah, interesting. Let's maybe take a step back and talk about this Oracle problem because we've mentioned it a couple of times now. What is the Oracle problem? And also, when we've mentioned API providers, like who are these companies in the real world that have some data that people or developers in the crypto ecosystem need? What sort of companies are we talking about when we talk about API providers? So that's two questions. Let's maybe first start with the Oracle problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Oracle problem is a misnomer because it is essentially defined from a technical point of view because Ethereum and a lot of the other smart contract platforms leave getting data from off-chain sources out of the scope. And then what the technical people see it as, like, we cannot get off-chain data to the chain, and then this is our problem. But the thing is, why do you need to use an oracle? Mm-hmm. Is that you need data. And then that data, you don't have the data, but the data is owned by someone else, and then they have to deliver that data to you. Then why should they be doing that? Because it's their business. So it should also make financial sense to them. So the game theory is not limited to the technical side, but it extends to the business layer as well. So whatever model you come up with should also make sense, should make business sense for all parties. Otherwise, they will not participate. So
absolutely.
Yeah, if you look at it that way, the Oracle problem is actually the API connectivity problem because what a real-world business does to monetize their data is they set up an API. And then when you make a request to an API, you can get a piece of data. Mm-hmm. And then what you should be able to do is call these APIs from your smart contracts and then build smart contract functionality on them. So yeah, essentially, Oracle problem, even though it somewhat defines the problem, it is not very accurate. So I would call it API connectivity problem.
Yeah, then who are the API providers?
Yeah, so essentially, what we see as DeFi today is it is dependent on real-world data. And then real-world data means real-world companies that provide this data. And although we only see DeFi as like actually useful use cases at this point, I very much believe that as we get more real-world data to the chain, we will see more actually useful use cases. Mm-hmm. And then although right now the whole crypto market is, or rather market cap is driven by DeFi use cases, this will, for this to grow, you will have to find other use cases other than DeFi. And the only way to do that will be getting more data from off-chain sources. And then where you would get that from is businesses that actually set these APIs up to monetize them. And there's one thing to note here. So right now, when you look at potential APIs that you could integrate to blockchains right now. For example, if you look at Honeycomb API Marketplace, there are crypto market APIs, like DeFi already does this. There are a lot of traditional finance APIs. We don't have that much right now available to us with the existing solutions. Mm-hmm. And then, for example, we have weather data, we have sports data, the results of sports events, and then we have some gaming stuff. The thing is, right now we have APIs for kinds of data and services that could be monetized. So these APIs exist right now because they can be monetized in the traditional Web 2.0 space. And mm-hmm. the reason why we don't have more of them or a larger variety is that there is no infrastructure to monetize them on Web3. So what I believe is that as we set up this infrastructure, these protocols and base to monetize your data through smart contracts, we will have a much larger variety of APIs than we have right now. And there will be APIs that we can think of right now. It would sound really weird to us, but when they pop up, it will all make sense and then they will be used on smart contracts.
Yeah. So essentially, today, there are not that many types of data that are needed on chain because there's not such a big variety of applications, mainly DeFi applications, but more will join as the whole crypto ecosystem becomes more mature, I guess. But one example of oracles that are really used and that we hear about all the time are price feeds. So, for example, a DeFi lending platform that issues loans to users, and users have to give some collateral in order to get that loan, they always have some liquidation mechanism because when the value of the user's collateral falls under a certain threshold, then the protocol needs to liquidate the loan and needs to sell the collateral. And for it to know whether the collateral falls under that threshold, it somehow needs to know what its price is. And for that, it uses then an oracle, right? And the oracle in return uses some API providers in the background. And these API providers, for example, really narrowing it down to price feeds now, are then like crypto exchanges, or who are these real world companies providing that data?
Yeah, so there are two reasons why the company would provide API services. One is essentially to monetize the data. So these are mostly price aggregators. So, for example, CoinMarketCap and CoinGecko, CoinPaprika. So these API providers just hit a variety of exchange APIs, get the data, the price data from there, and then they process it. So, for example, if they think that an exchange has a lot of wash trading, then they weight the data coming from that down, or they just essentially they curate data. The other kind is they may not be monetizing the data, but rather doing it for, I guess, prestige purposes. So that would include crypto exchanges. So I don't think that I can think of a crypto exchange right now that has a paid API because, like, for transparency purposes and to be able to, I guess, tracked by these price aggregators, they all have these public APIs. Mm-hmm. And here you can give, for example, Binance as an example, because Binance both owns Binance Exchange and also CoinMarketCap at this point, but they run two different APIs. One gives the raw exchange data and the other is an aggregator. So yeah, but then the fact that this is for free doesn't actually mean that it is like less trustworthy because it is actually the source of the data. But then it is not processed. So you would have to trust the exchange to, I guess, not inflate their volume and such. Mm-hmm. But then you would select your exchanges based on that. Yeah, but in terms of DeFi, when we say DeFi, we always think of crypto markets. But I hope that we will be able to extend that to traditional markets. And the API provider types are a lot more different in that field. But for crypto, it is essentially just exchanges and aggregators. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have established that oracles are important, at least for DeFi today, maybe for more use cases in the future. What were the most common solutions up until this point? Because we know that these smart contracts, they need the data and it comes from some API providers. But up until now, we had systems like Chainlink that were trying to give some guarantees to the developers that the data that they would receive from the API would be like not manipulated, would be accurate. Because with the example that I have mentioned just before, it's obvious that if the price would be reported in a false way, it could harm users and it could even be used for some actor to make profits by draining some funds from the protocol or something. So that's what these Oracle's network do, right? They provide some, or they try to provide some trust guarantees. And can you talk about, we all know Chainlink is the largest of these Oracle networks, but I think there are some others as well. Can you talk about how they work and how they try to provide these trust guarantees?
Yeah, so I think Oracle's as a solution to the problem of getting off-chain data is pretty well defined. Essentially, there are Oracle nodes that can communicate with the blockchain, and then they vote on the validity of some off-chain data that is delivered. And then you have some sort of a consensus algorithm that is used to aggregate all those votes and all those data into a single answer, which is then considered to be the truth. So the problem with this approach is that it approaches these Oracle nodes as things that get the data out of thin air. So for example, if you have a decentralized Oracle network that reports FUSD data, it may have these 100 Oracle nodes, and then they all report the FUSD data, the FUSD price. Well, essentially, the question that you should ask is, where are these people getting their data from? So even if you could prove that these 100 Oracle nodes are all operated by different people, which is nearly impossible to do in a decentralized way. So for example, with Chainlink, it is Chainlink the company KYCing each Oracle node, and then like, who's KYCing Chainlink? Nobody. Mm-hmm. And then like, that's not a decentralized way of doing it. But even if you were able to do that, how do you know they get their data from different sources? And what if they're getting their data all from the same source? Now, the decentralization at the Oracle node level is not really useful because at the source level, you're completely decentralized. And another problem with this approach is that, well, you have these Oracle nodes that are getting their data from some source, but what if they tamper with the data? So when they're asked the FUSD price, what if they call the API, get the response and tamper with it? Or they may not even call the API and they can just give some different answer. And all of the existing Oracle solutions right now, which we call third-party based Oracle solutions because they all depend on third-party Oracles, mm-hmm. which are Oracle nodes that are operated by third parties and not the API providers themselves. So what they do is they come up with some game theoretic or some cryptographic solutions that would try to make it impossible for the third parties to tamper with the data, or in some cases, it would make it obvious that they have tampered with the data. And the problem is these solutions are both costly, financially costly, because for example, if it's a staking mechanism, then someone is staking some funds there that are under risk, so that's a cost. And then there is the opportunity risk of not using those funds in some other way that would be actually profitable. And then there's actually financial loss in that regard. Another problem is that the solution is not foolproof, essentially. If it's a cryptographic solution, it can be hacked. If it's a game theory-based solution, the game theoretic model may be insufficient, or there can be essentially attacks that will be able to get away without being punished by the staking mechanism, which we talk a lot in other venues, but I'm not going to get into detail. But essentially, these are all suboptimal, depending on third parties. So what we do differently with API 3 is that we will be depending only on first-party oracles, which means that the API provider, which is the source of the data, also operates the Oracle node that writes the data to the chain. And then this way, one, you no longer have a middleman that you would have to pay to provide this as a service. Because when you have a third-party Oracle node operator, then obviously to keep on the service, you need to pay them. And then you need to pay to a lot of different Oracle node operators because you obviously will not have a single Oracle node. And that would be a central point of failure. You will have multiple ones. So you will have to pay to them all. And then another thing that you have to pay for is you have to incentivize them so that it makes more sense to act honestly than to attack.
Mm. So you remove some rent-seeking middlemen that inflate the price of the API, basically.
Yeah, and in short, I just call it, it improves cost and security. But the thing is, when you think about an Oracle, these are the only two things that you care about. It must be cheap, it must be secure. So when you use the first part Oracle, it is cheaper, it is more secure, and that is at no cost. Because like normally, when you have this engineering solution, most of the time it's a trade-off. You have a more secure solution, but it's more expensive. Or rather, it is cheaper, but you're losing on some security. But when you use first-party oracles instead of third-party oracles, it is both cheaper and more secure. So it doesn't really make sense to use third-party oracles if you can do first-party oracles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and one important part, you mentioned that it's very easy for these API providers who know nothing about blockchain to deploy this API 3 node on the blockchain, basically. So what is it that makes this process so simple?
So what you have mentioned before, the domain knowledge, comes into play here because we actually know what API providers are capable of and what would they do and what would they not do. So for example, recently I was talking to an API provider that we have all heard of, that I will not name, about an AI node integration. And the first thing that they asked is, do I have to dedicate an engineer for this? And I said, no. And then he said, okay, then we can continue, because that is the ultimate thing that they care about.
Mm.
None of the teams, none of the API providers or blockchain teams, no one has enough people, technical people. And that for this to happen, for first-party oracles to happen, it really has to be really easy to set, and it really shouldn't need someone to operate it.
Okay. So this you have addressed by developing the AIR node, right?
Yeah. So essentially what we did with Honeycomb API Marketplace was that, so we were doing these integrations to chaining, between chaining nodes and API providers, and using both the Oracle node operators and API providers created a lot of friction, because it's just another moving part in the whole equation. So if we could remove one of them, it would be ideal. And if you would remove one of them, it would be the node operators, because you cannot do without the API provider. So the obvious solution there is to have the API provider operate their own Oracle node. And then like we tried that, and it just wasn't feasible, because after doing all these integrations and working with the API providers and talking to them about all these things, and then us running an Oracle node ourselves and knowing what it entails, we know that the API providers will not be able to do this. And by saying that they wouldn't be able to do this, I'm just saying that it is not feasible. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters in terms of business anyway. So yeah, what we realized was that the only way to solve this problem was to come up with an Oracle node that would actually be feasible to be run by API providers. And that's how AIR-Node was born.
Okay. And just so I'm sure I get this, what is the danger of, like, let's call it the third-party Oracle systems? Because I get that it's very hard for these API providers to run blockchain nodes or Oracle nodes themselves. I get that. But what is the danger of basically these middlemen running the nodes on behalf? Like, they use the API in the background and then they run this Oracle node. So you mentioned that it would introduce some cost because you need to pay these third parties, which is more expensive. But do you think it's also insecure?
When you think about security in terms of an Oracle network, the main risk that you should be considering is the risk of collusion, which a majority of the Oracles misreporting to attack you. So how secure a network is can be essentially assessed by how likely is it to be targeted by a collusion attack. Because the problem is, since the aggregation method is essentially a consensus algorithm, like all consensus algorithms, it can be attacked by a majority, or like it depends on the exact aggregation function. But if we think about a median, for example, a 51% attack is entirely possible. So then what you need to think about is, for example, if you have the third-party Oracle network, which we were a part of, well, when we looked at it, is a collusion attack likely in the setup? Well, yes, it is, because we were essentially one of those Oracle node operators, and we could see multiple Oracle node operators essentially cooperating and colluding to attack. And the main problem is that they would be misreporting on-chain, and then whatever they gain from that attack can be distributed among the attackers trustlessly. Because you can just have the smart contract that pays out the colluding oracles. Mm-hmm. So it's not in real life when you when you're a criminal, you have to trust the other criminals if you're doing something together. But in this case, you don't even have to trust each other. You just need to find multiple people that would be financially incentivized to attack. And for example, if the attack is, let's say it pays out $100 million, which is, I think, feasible. And then let's say the largest number of oracles in the network is 21. So 11 oracles would be able to attack, and each would be paid about $10 million. Would they take it, is the question. When you compare it to what they're being paid right now, to be honest, yeah, that is very likely. And that is a huge risk that I, especially if DeFi keeps on growing, it will become a reality.
Yeah. Did this ever happen in practice, this sort of collusion?
In the Oracle context, it didn't. So okay. I think it should be compared to these minor attacks. For example, Ethereum Classic was attacked pretty recently, mm-hmm. in this year, I think. So it has happened a lot when people are anonymous. And what is protecting the, for example, the chaining network right now, the only thing that is protecting them right now is that people are not anonymous, mm-hmm. because they are KYC'd by chaining. But then the problem there is this security measure is entirely centralized.
Yeah. And what do you see as the issue there? So this, I guess the chaining team does that to prevent some malicious organizations to enter the chaining network and to tamper with the data. So what is the issue of having this somewhat centralized setup?
Yeah, essentially the existing solution cannot function without a centralized party policing it.
So it places a lot of trust into the ability of the Chainlink team, basically.
Yeah, you have to trust them 100%. Mm-hmm. But the problem there is, if you're trusting Chainlink with everything, then they should just run a centralized Oracle. And then at least now we wouldn't be able to be attacked by the third-party node operators. And then, because at this stage, we are trusting Chainlink to govern the network properly, but then we also have to trust the third-party node operators to not attack. If Chainlink ran centralized oracles, then the only risk would be it would be Chainlink attacking, and then the resulting solution would be safer. So we are talking about a solution that is less safe than a centralized oracle right now.
Okay. It introduces a lot of complexity for achieving not so much.
Yeah, it is a centralized oracle with extra steps.
Okay.
Quick shout out to our sponsor, Stakewise.io. Stakewise is a really cool ETH2 staking provider. They take care of all the heavy lifting involved in the staking process. Basically, they offer two options to stake. Pool staking, where you can stake any amount and you can withdraw your staked ETH at any point. Or solo staking, where you need a minimum of 32 ETH and you have your own validator node hosted by Stakewise and maintained by Stakewise, but you also have full control over the funds. So there's two options depending on your needs and preferences. I really recommend you check them out at stakewise.io. They have an incentivized testnet going on at the moment, where you can get familiar with the user experience of the whole staking process using fake ETH or testnet ETH. And they will go live with their production app in the next couple of weeks.
And now the AIR node, I get that it's making it that easy for API providers to basically send their data to the blockchain very easily and they don't need to use a third party anymore, like Chainlink or something. They can just deploy it and start monetizing the data, which is also important. But now we don't have like any middleman anymore. Why is the Air node needed at all? Like, couldn't the dApp developers integrate the API directly? Like, if the data comes from the API anyway, why is an Air node needed, basically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so actually, I think there are a lot of people doing that right now, either with their custom implementations or Chainlink nodes, and even some of those people have like stated interest about using Air node instead of a Chainlink node. But the problem there is, so let's say, for example, we have this API provider who provides the results for football matches, right? So,
yeah.
And then there's this guy who wanted to implement this decentralized application, a betting application that is based on this API. So mm-hmm. they implement the contract, they implement the dApp, they deploy it, they do the integration to the API, and then they deploy their Oracle node as well. And now their dApp gets fed by the Oracle that is operated by this smart contract developer, the dApp developer. So now as a user of that dApp, you have to trust two people for that to work properly. One, the API provider, you need to trust them so that they provide correct data. And then you need to trust the dApp developer because they're operating the Oracle node themselves. The problem there is you probably trust the API provider because they're a real world business and providing correct data is their business model, essentially. But then the dApp developer is just this anonymous guy.
Okay, got it. So the Air node is not really introducing any security layer between the smart contract and the API. It's really just about making it easy for the API provider to deploy that data on chain and bring it into a digestible format so that smart contract developers can use it in an easy way. But it doesn't introduce any like security guarantees.
It does actually. It minimizes the trust required from the user. So now the user doesn't have to trust both the dApp developer and the API provider. Now they only have to trust the API provider for the dApp to run correctly. And then, so for example, if you're an API provider wanting to monetize your data, you no longer have to implement the dApp yourself. You can just make your data available and you can just have hundreds of untrustworthy dApp developers use their data to develop a trustless application, or rather an application that only trusts the API provider.
Okay. Yeah. So a user could see in the future that a certain dApp is using data that comes from an Air node. And so they know that the only party that needs to be trusted is the API provider. There's no middleman anymore that could tamper with the data. Okay, so that's really cool. So I get that this is much better, but there's still some trust placed into the API provider. Is there any scenario that you can imagine where an API provider would directly like tamper with the data?
I think, there are two reasons why they wouldn't. One, they're a real world business. And then they have a lot of reputation stake, off-chain reputation, and future revenue on this. Because if they perform such an attack, then that is essentially the end of their business. And then there's also the fact that now they're not anonymous anymore. Because when you think about a third-party Oracle network, they are getting their data from the API provider. But if the API provider performs an attack and then just feeds wrong data to the Oracle, it will be the Oracle node that will be blamed and not the API provider, because it is much more likelier for the Oracle node operator to tamper with the data than the API provider reporting or misreporting data. So, but in the first party Oracle case, now if they misreport, everyone will know that that API provider has misreported, and then that would obviously, I think, have legal repercussions. So even though, it is difficult to take a smart contract to court, but if you're an API provider misreporting to users and then getting some kind of financial benefit out of that. I don't think that that would be allowed in most cases in most countries. So yeah, essentially API providers are much less likelier to perform collusion attacks. But then the solution for that is pretty typical, just like all Oracle networks, you need to use multiple sources, multiple oracles. So if you have a first-party Oracle network, then you can just aggregate from them. And if you use a large number of oracles, then it will be a lot more difficult to perform a collusion attack because, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, you need a majority. And then when you have more API providers, then you need to have more API providers collude. And then that becomes less likelier.
Mm-hmm. And can anyone deploy an AIR node? Or is there some entity or a centralized team checking who is behind that AIR node and only accepts it if it meets certain conditions? How is that process like?
We care a lot about making the technology permissionless. So for example, if you go to GitHub right now, you can see the node itself and a lot of documentation about how to integrate an API and how to deploy an AIR node and how to make a request to an AIR node. So there's nothing stopping you from deploying your own AIR node, making your own integrations, and then using your own data, or rather even providing your data to someone else outside of the context of API 3. But what API 3 does is, it's one, it has API providers set up these Oracle nodes, because as I said, even when you make this whole process very easy, setting up the node and all the other stuff, API providers still will not do the integration spontaneously. Mm-hmm. So what API 3 does is, it does the business development, it does the technical integration, and then after that, they know that that AIR node is operated by this API provider, because that is still a difficult problem to solve. You have to know that a specific AIR node is operated by a specific API provider to be able to call that first party. So API 3 does that in a decentralized way. So if you compare that with chaining does this in a centralized way, it's a centralized KYC mechanism. In this case, it is the DAO doing this thing so that it is decentralized. And then API 3 builds decentralized APIs out of these first-party oracles. So AIR node itself just integrates an API to the blockchain, and then API 3 does the rest.
Okay. And how does the DAO sort of KYC that organization that runs the AIR node? How do they know that it's indeed the API provider running that AIR node?
So yeah, one good thing about the AIR node protocol is that an API provider will have a single ID that they will use across all chains. So they will only have to do this once. And how we are planning to approach this is for the API provider to announce their IDs over public channels. This can be their Twitter, this can be their API documentations or whatever else. And then right now we are working with York to build this first-party Oracle registry, which will have the DAO members vote on provider ID. So when, let's say, we integrate an API provider and they announce their ID, someone will make a proposal saying that this provider ID belongs to this API.
Okay.
And then all the DAO members will check that and then they will vote yes. And then essentially anyone can verify that that provider ID belongs to that API.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds very cool and novel also.
Yeah, essentially, an Oracle solution doesn't work without a decentralized identity solution. It is embedded inside the problem.
Yeah, yeah. A common concern about this design is that there's no real accuracy of the data coming from the API provider. But I guess you're saying that the most important reason why an first-party Oracle provider would not tamper the data is that they have this reputation at stake, right? But then you also have other components in the API 3 system that are really kind of new that API 3 brings to the table. That's the staking and the insurance. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so a lot of the Oracle solutions have some kind of a staking mechanism. And we looked into all of them. And we weren't really satisfied with them. And there's a Medium post about that up. But to summarize, essentially, what a staking mechanism should do is when the oracles misreport or a data feed misreports, it should punish them for that. And to be able to do that, the mechanism should be able to detect any wrong answers, essentially, the wrong answers that the data feed provides. But how do you even do that? That essentially means that there is some other source that you trust more than the oracle itself. But if you have that kind of a source, why wouldn't you use that instead of the oracle? And then as soon as you use the most trustworthy data source, now what are you going to compare that against to punish malicious oracle nodes? So essentially, that kind of a solution that doesn't work, like in theory, it doesn't work. So it doesn't really matter if how you would plan to solve it. It's just not possible. And then the solution to that is somehow you should be able to use a more trustworthy data source. And there should be a reason why you cannot use it at the request time or at the time that you have to detect any wrong answers. And then the reason for that can be that your more trustworthy oracle is not really responsive, because AirNode-based oracles are very responsive because they're essentially, they work programmatically. It's an application that it detects the request and then it makes the call, it writes it back. It essentially works instantly or in the order of blocks. Mm-hmm. So, but you can come up with an oracle that is more trustworthy, but it works in days or weeks. So this is what Claros is, essentially. It is a sort of an oracle, a subjective oracle. It is very trustworthy. It has great security guarantees. But the problem is it is very slow. So okay. You couldn't run DeFi on Claros.
So Claros can come at a conclusion about the truth, can resolve some disputes, but it does so in a much slower way. And so you cannot use it directly as an oracle, but you can use it as a layer on top to make your oracle system more secure.
Yeah, essentially, staking has to work, or it doesn't have to work that way, but one of the ways that staking can work is retrospectively, so towards the past. So you can actually punish reports in the past pretty accurately, because you have a lot of time to think about it. But then you always have to somehow loosen the requirements of how the oracle will work. And in this case, we are just loosening the requirement of how much time you're required to come up with the correct answer. And then this becomes possible. So what you can do with Claros is that you can just slash the API 3 DAO, for example, when there's a misreport. And that would be a traditional staking mechanism. But yeah, at that point, we just thought that, hey, since we have this infrastructure in place, there's really no reason to implement insurance with this, so that this is not only a game theoretic guarantee about that there wouldn't be an attack, but rather now the user of the decentralized API is actually protected against any misreporting that can be done by the decentralized API. So in a sense, it is a null approach to staking, and then it's being extended to insurance.
Okay, so people stake their API3 tokens, and this collateral basically is pooled and used as insurance. So people basically insure the users, the end users, or at least the developers of the application, that their node will not have a malfunction. And if it does have a malfunction, then the stake that the token holders have provided will be used to pay out all the damaged users, all the people who have incurred a loss, or at least the developers. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And one of the weaknesses with a lot of the existing solutions is that they protect against a limited variety of, I guess, sources of loss or reasons of loss. But in this case, insurance essentially protects against everything. So for example, if the DAO maliciously selected API providers that would misreport. Then this misreport will also, or the result of the damages will also be covered. So it even protects against damages that are sourced from the governance level. So I think that is something to point out, that it's not only technical problems, but also it is essentially any kind of damage that can happen would be protected by an insurance.
And is this happening by default, or do the developers have to pay for that insurance on top of the subscription fees to the API or to the R node? Is that an additional service, or does it come by default?
Yeah, it is an additional service, and it can be customized. So for example, up to how much the insurance will cover, and in which cases will the damages will be covered. So these are all parameters that can be set with the user. And then, something that people don't really take into account is that an Oracle solution that is more secure is more costly than one that is not as secure. So at this stage, people are thinking that Oracles are for free. But the thing is, the more secure an Oracle solution is, the more costly it is, even if it is being subsidized by some token price increases and these unsustainable practices. But at the end of the day, if you need security, you're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah. So this gives the dApp developers some quantifiable measure of how secure the Oracle is. If it's insured up until a certain threshold, they know this is the maximum damage that can happen through this attack vector.
Yeah, correct. And then it depends on how the data is used too, because, so for example, there are some Oracle malfunctions that have happened for some DeFi projects that really didn't cause that much damages. And it was surprising. But the thing is, the total value locked or the market cap of the projects do not directly relate to how much a potential Oracle malfunction would cause in damages. So we will have to see and learn how much insurance people will feel secure with.
Yeah. And the more people stake, the more insurance collateral there will be, and hence the more useful also the insurance feature will be. Because I guess protocol like Aave, for example, it wouldn't really be considered secure if the API 3 DAO could insure it up until $10 million. It would need much higher guarantees, right? Because it has $1.5 billion under management. So the more people stake, basically, and the more valuable the API 3 token becomes, the more trustworthy the network also becomes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. But one thing to point out here is that Aave is using data feeds that are not insured at all right now. Mm-hmm. So they are fine with $0 insurance. So anything more will be an improvement.
Understood. Yeah. Okay. And one last question about this insurance feature. So is every R node insured to the same extent? Like if I stake, for example, in the API 3 DAO once it becomes available, am I insuring all the R nodes by staking? Or can I decide, okay, I want to stake my collateral on this R node because I know it's run by, Kraken, and I think they're super trustworthy? Or is it used for all R nodes equally?
We actually thought a lot about this, and we came to the conclusion that we would need to have a single pool. And at this stage, it will be a single pool. You will provide collateral for all. But the thing is, all layer nodes will not be trusted equally while doing aggregation. So essentially, the more trustworthy API providers will be dependent on more. And then if a less trustworthy API provider's layer node has gone down or misreported, then that is a lot less likely to result
impact.
In a decentralized API level impact.
Mm-hmm.
There will be specialized teams to decide on these matters, and then the DAO will govern them.
So when I'm I'm Aave, let's say, and I'm using some price feed, then that price feed will be composed of different API providers, let's say Kraken, CryptoCompare, CoinGecko, and then these API providers will have different weights, or their responses will have different weights according to how much API Suite, the DAO, trusts each of these API providers.
Yeah, and like that is not only about trustworthiness, but it can be a matter of volume because, for example, an exchange can be pretty trustworthy. For example, if you think about the Compound incident with Coinbase recently. Well, Coinbase is a pretty trustworthy API, but when you try to get DAI USD price from it, the volume is not that high, then that market can be manipulated. So it is not only a matter of trustworthiness, but also volume and other factors in other use cases other than crypto prices.
Makes sense. This was perfect. A very good overview of the system. Let's maybe finish this off with talking about the kind of use cases that you think will be uniquely enabled by API 3 or not just uniquely enabled by API 3, but the sort of data types that we'll see more and more being used on the blockchain in addition to price data. Because I saw there's a lot of talk about KYC data and open banking data that could, for example, be used. So I could prove that I have a clean credit score by giving some smart contract access to the data of my bank account. Is that something that you find interesting, or is there other type of applications?
At this stage, what excites me the most is these newly found API provider companies who just got into this solely to monetize their data on blockchain. So it is not only now existing API providers that also want to monetize on blockchain, but rather people see this as a primary business model. And then the existing solutions don't really satisfy their requirements. And then they come talking to us and try to learn how they can use ANR for those purposes. So I find that exciting because it will, I think, enable use cases that we cannot think of right now. And what I can think of is, in most cases, probably less, I guess, exciting than what could happen. But I think the lowest hanging fruit in this regard is traditional finance data. So the main problem with that is that we have talked to a lot of API providers about this in the context of Honeycomb and also API 3. Yeah, essentially, they need to control the entire chain, or rather the entire lifetime of their data. So essentially, they're not allowed to give their data to a random Oracle node operator for them to monetize it however they want. So it is incredibly difficult to do, or not even incredible, it is, I guess, impossible to do traditional finance-based stuff using third-party oracles. Mm. But first-party oracles makes this a possibility. And it would look no more different than getting crypto price data. So it is also very achievable technically.
Yeah. So traditional finance data, for example, some stock price, for example, or what do you mean by traditional finance data?
Yes, stock prices are what people are the most excited about. Mm. Other traditional asset prices like gold, etc., these are more obtainable, but stock prices, they are like the licenses that the API providers have, they're a lot more restrictive.
Okay. Well, that sounds very exciting. Thank you so much for this conversation, Burak.
Thank you for inviting me.
Hey, it's me again. I hope you liked this episode. If you did, please feel free to share it with your friends and family or give us a follow on Twitter or LinkedIn. And if you have some feedback, reach out to me. I'd love to hear.